بيعطي مش عارف مصر. ها ما تفكرش مصر. Next slide, please. So this is a little hard to see, but I wanted to share with you who has it. So my age, most people have met with that are 3 years old. Guess what they have. But also, yeah, the number of people, 37% of people 65 and older have Medicare. That's not so. Those are the people who have Medicare, and yet they still have it. The annual household income, 38,000 or more, 38% of them have Medicare debt. Race and ethnicity, it's pretty equal among black people, but more likely to be against white people. It's not necessarily a problem of being uninsured. 71% of people who are uninsured can be deaf. But the surprise is that 61% of people who are insured have none. I was listening this morning to the People's Farm WESA. They were talking about three offers and what a problem that is providing, especially for the doctors to have to do triage every time they get procedure. And one of the things that happens is you go to the emergency room, you have insurance, the insurance, you have some serious issue, they do a procedure, the insurance company disallows it. Procedure even done. They couldn't wait to get compensation. So now you with insurance. Or you go to the wrong hospital. I have UPMC for life. I live a mile. But I can't do it. And if I have a heart attack or something, that's what okay. So I don't know what would happen to me if I go to the hospital. Next slide. So more statistics. 4 in 10 adults currently have medical or dental bills to pay them. And this just kind of shows the number of people who not on medical debt, not on medical tickets. Some medical debt is paid by credit card. So you still have medical debt just on your credit card. Some people who have medical debt, they get their family to help. Some people have debt that they've taken out of bank. Some people are paying costs directly to the provider over time. And some people just can't. And so what we're talking about today is people who just can't. The people whose debt has been set. The debt collection. It's the organization, what the organization for mostly people. So the uninsured parents, those with lower income, Black and Hispanic adults, and women are among the most likely to have medical health care debt. So this is just another slide to the total amount of health care debt. It's 41%. And then there's 16% of healthcare debt only half time. And you've already seen some of these. One of the reason I put this on is because of that is education and gender. So people with no college degree are more likely to have medical debt. People with college debt would still have medical debt. I suspect that a lot of people who don't have college degrees probably have jobs that don't have degrees. That's just suffering. I don't need to think that. Women, ladies, are much more likely to have medical debt than men. 48%, 34%. Right, so that's the video you all want. Story. People with kids are much more likely than your kids don't have a nice call and they call funny and they grab their head. It's taking you cash out whether you're a kid or not. So, with kids, but people with kids are much more likely. And finally, the region that we'll get. The Northeast, 35%. Midwest, 31%. The South, 48%. And it's that's the body part of the 48%. And in the West, 35%. So, you know, all of these statistics sort of all sort of melded together. Oh, very. There's more black people in a lot of sense. Black people are more likely to commit it. So it just all kind of melds together. It's a little harder. But here's one thing that I found in this. Half of adults on healthcare debt go less than 20. You've heard of this large. Not coming up 500. Most of the 22% is in the 1,000 to 2,500. Almost all of it is less than. And to you and me, that might not seem like, but to those people who can't afford it, people's lives are being affected because they can't pay off their medical debts. They're mostly doing medical expenses. They're not doing things like cancer or maybe they have to survive well. They're due to their own care. But they're also due to both their care and some care. And when they ask them the question, which of the following is closer to describing the bills attributed to your medical debt? 72% said that the bill would work. One time a short-term medical expense for single hospital or treatment for an accident. Lab fees are the top source of medical. That kind of surprised me when I think about it. Maybe not. No, they are not. They don't blah, 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 blah. They don't do blah, blah, blah. And they're doing lots of blah because they want to make sure they cover all the bases. So that's what you got. 59% of the medical bills for lab fees or diagnostic tests. Only 12% is for pregnancy and childbirth. And that kind of surprised me. But maybe, you know, you got
that's true.
plan for how you're going to pay for this, unless something goes wrong, you know. And when something goes wrong, then probably one of them, our kids had an emergency C-section that they weren't planning, and that was a bill that they had to pay off over time. So we're going to talk about debt that's been sent to collection agencies. And that's that deals with debt that's been sent to collection agencies. So 47% have been contacted by a collection agency in the past 5 years
to collect a medical debt. The woman who's the youth director at our church told us that one of the reasons that she took the job at Bower Hill was because we had health insurance. And her daughter has asthma and has very expensive drugs that she has to take every month. And they had medical debt. And they were called every day. Every day, the debt collectors called to get this debt paid. Very stressful. 3% had to declare bankruptcy because of their medical debt. And 3% lost their homes due to eviction. So homelessness and medical debt are correlated. Bankruptcy and medical debt are correlated. So the question was, suppose you had an unexpected medical bill and the amount not covered by any insurance you may have to have came to $500. How would you pay that? 30% of the people who already have healthcare debt said that they couldn't pay it. They couldn't pay it. And I'm going to let you guys look at the tape to get more of this information off of here if you're interested. But so you'll be able to see it better from the Zoom, I'm sure. So there have been some changes recently about medical debt. And I wanted to share those with you. These have sort of happened since we started working on our medical debt project. So first, the big three credit companies, Experian, and I forget what the rest of them are. There's three big ones. They got together and they decided that effective July 1st, 2022, all medical collection debt that has been paid by the consumer in full is no longer on their credit report. So even if somebody paid off their medical debt, it could still stay on their credit report and affect their credit rating. In addition, the time period between when an unpaid medical debt would appear on a consumer's credit report was increased from 6 months to a year. So the real problem with uncollected medical debt is that it can show up on your credit report. And your credit report governs your life. If you want to get a house, if you want to rent a house, they look at your credit report. If you want to get a loan, they look at your credit report. Some people, if you want to get a job, they look at your credit report. When I was starting this project, I read all sorts of horror stories about people with medical debt who were homeless. There was a story about a 19-year-old man in Colorado who had a heart attack. And they took him to the wrong hospital. It wasn't in his plan. And he ended up owing $19,000 of medical debt. And he's homeless because he cannot rent an apartment because of that medical debt on his credit report. So the other thing that happened was in the beginning of 2023, medical collection debt with an initial reported balance of less than $500 was no longer going to be put on the credit report. So that's also huge because you saw what a lot of the credit, a lot of the debt is less than $500. So this is a big change. And then if you've been paying attention to the news lately, President Biden in June announced a proposal through the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau office to totally ban medical debt from credit reports. So hopefully that will go through. The comment period is open until August 12th to comment on that with compute. This is a long Consumer Financial Protection Bureau office. They call it the CFPBO. So if you see that, that's what that means. So that's a lot of hopefully that will be approved and will stay approved. And, you know, that's something that we can do, is to write a comment about that and send it to the CFPBO. So let's get to our project. Bower Hill Community Church became a Matthew 25 church in April of 2023. And we decided to focus on the elimination of systemic poverty. So if you become a Matthew 25 church, you commit to one of three things: to work towards the elimination of systemic poverty, to work towards the elimination of systemic racism, or to use it to build up your congregational vitality. We thought as a committee that committing to ending systemic poverty was probably a little less politically fraught than ending systemic racism. And they're so, as you saw from the statistics, they're so intermeshed that it's kind of working towards the same thing. And also, this project helped to build up our congregational vitality because we got a lot of buy-in from it. So I was working more then in April of 2023. And after lunch, I was checking out CNN like I usually did. And I saw an article in CNN about a church called Moravian Christian Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, that had collected $15,000 and had eliminated like $2 million of medical debt. I'm like, whoa, that's interesting. That sounds like that would be a good project for our first project for Bower Hill's Matthew 25 initiative. So I thought about it and I thought, well, who would we provide medical debt relief to? We could do it for people living in the presbytery. And then I thought about East Palestine, Ohio, because that had happened in February. I thought, well, I think East Palestine, Ohio is in the Synod of the Trinity. So maybe we could do this for everybody living within the Synod of the Trinity. The Synod of the Trinity is the next bureaucratic level up in our Presbyterian church from our presbytery, from the Pittsburgh Presbytery. And the Synod of the Trinity includes all of Pennsylvania, all of West Virginia, the kind of octopus head part of West Virginia, that's not the Eastern Panhandle, sort of the Western Northern Panhandle, and then that bulge, and then just a few counties in southeastern Ohio. So I checked and it said that Columbiana County is in the Synod of the Trinity. So I said, this is great. We'll go for the Synod of the Trinity. So I talked to Ralph Lowe and I talked to Forrest Clausen. We had a meeting with those guys. Forrest is the executor of the Synod. And he said, oh yeah, sure, this is great. We can do this. Nobody else is doing this. This is one of the first things I wanted to know was, is anybody else doing this? And they said, no. So we set this up. And then I found out that East Palestine is not in the Synod of the Trinity, because Columbiana County is actually split in two. And that half of the Columbiana County is in the Eastern Ohio. But the wind blows from west to east. And, you know, that accident happened very close to the state line. And so all those people living east of East Palestine are going to have some serious medical bills, I'm afraid. So that's what we decided to do. We were going to collect $500,000 from people who are members of the Synod of the Trinity. That's all of us. And we were going to do that by asking every member of the Synod of the Trinity to donate $5. That was our plan. That doesn't sound that big an ask, really. But we were not able to get that message out to churches that that's what we really wanted them to do, was to ask their members to donate $5. And so a lot of churches either didn't see the email. We send out a lot of emails, and a lot of churches get a lot of emails. And I think a lot of them didn't get seen. Or the churches didn't understand what we were asking them to do, which was to ask their congregants to go on the website and give $5. And so they thought we wanted their mission committee to go online and give $5 for everybody in their congregation, which is fine, but that's harder. So here's what happened. So the first question I think a lot of people said was, $500,000 can be $50 million of medical debt forgiven. How can this possibly be? That sounds like a scam. What? Really? So Ted, please play that video. So we used this organization called RIP Medical Debt, which has now changed their name to Undo Medical Debt. And Ted's going to show a video off of their website.
Over 100 million Americans, or one in three, have struggled with the weight of medical debt, causing many to deplete their savings, turn to crowdfunding, declare bankruptcy, or worse, delay the medical care they need to stay alive. More than half of Americans say getting a bill they can't afford is as scary as a serious diagnosis itself. Our debt is harming us. But what if we could make that debt disappear? We're Undoing Medical Debt, a nonprofit that has done just that, eliminating billions of dollars in debt for U.S. healthcare patients. We are working not only to shift the way we think about medical debt, but change the lives of people living in its shadow. So how do we abolish billions of dollars in debt without billions of dollars? By using the rules of the game, not to win, but to create a world where we take care of those who need it most. When you go to a doctor's office, hospital, or clinic, you might get a separate bill for every step of your care. If these bills aren't paid, the provider may attempt to collect them, or they could be sold to a collection agency for a fraction of what you owe. However, they will still attempt to collect the full amount owed from you. Some will add negative marks to your credit report, affecting your ability to buy a car or home, while others will even take legal action, resulting in wage garnishments and property liens. These actions used to leverage payment threaten the financial health of millions nationwide who have this debt through no fault of their own. That's where we come. Undoing Medical Debt works with our partners, like hospitals and debt buyers, to find those debts that will have the most impact when relieved. While we're not able to search for an individual person's debt, we can filter them down to make sure we're serving the people who are least able to pay. With our donor support, we're able to buy millions of dollars of debt at drastically reduced pricing, which makes this disappearing act one of monumental proportions. But we don't stop there. We ensure negative marks on credit are removed, partner with hospitals to improve their financial aid programs, and support policy changes to prevent the creation of new medical debts. So not only can recipients forget their past, but they can begin to move forward. Our programs put no additional tax burden on the recipients and are compliant with HIPAA and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And after all the behind-the-scenes work is done, comes the real magic. Every year, we send out tens of thousands of letters to homes all across the country, letting people know their past is in the past, their health is not a burden, and their life is worth more than a bill. And together, we'll cure medical debt.
Pastor Kenny Camacho of the Annapolis, Maryland Revolution Christian Congregation has long believed our nation's healthcare system is broken.
So when I first heard about RIP medical debt, I thought, So I went to Charity Navigator to see what they had to say. They had, at that point, 4 stars and 100% rating. So I said, okay, let's look into this a little bit more. So just to restart to go over this again. Undue medical debt was started by professional debt buyers. And these were guys who went out on the debt market, would buy a package of debt for a penny that was worth a dollar. And then they'd send their people out to pester, harass, cajole, threaten the debtors to pay the whole amount. So I buy your debt for a dollar, your $100 of debt for a dollar, and then I send you an email or phone you every day to get your $100 back. So I may not get it for everybody, but if I could get 20% pay, I've made some money. So that's the way the debt market works. And that's the way these debt buyers leveraged our money to buy the debt. So Undue buys the debt portfolio for pennies on a dollar. They go out to the debt market and buy a portfolio of debt. But rather than pestering the people who owe the debt to pay it, they come to us and say, would you pay for this debt? And then we'll forgive this debt for this person. So it's actually sort of using the market the way that it was set up with a little twist. And the twist is that we pay for it instead of the person who owes it. So that's the way it works. Do you guys have any, if you have questions, we'll talk about that later, but keep that in mind if you have questions about this, how this works, because it's kind of mind-bending. So when our campaign was completed, we had raised $48,986.35, which was far from our goal, but that's okay. So one thing we haven't talked about was who qualifies for debt relief from undue medical debt. The criteria are that you have to earn 4 times or less of the poverty level in your area. And that sounds like a lot. We'll talk about that in a minute. Or you have more than 5% of your annual income owed in medical debt. So let's talk about the 4 times the poverty level. If you are 2 times or less the poverty level, you can get Medicaid. So the people who are really having a problem with medical debt are the people in the 3 to 4 times range. And during COVID, a lot more people were able to get Medicaid, if you recall. And then they changed that. And I think it was in September, maybe last September, 120,000 Pennsylvania families lost their Medicaid. So that's a lot. It's a lot of people who are going to have medical debt now that didn't necessarily have it before. Because they had changed the requirements during COVID to make it less stringent. And then they went back to the more stringent requirements. So people actually lost their Medicaid. They suspected that there were 180,000 who were going to lose it, but only 120,000 of those really fell within those more stringent requirements. The other 60,000 just hadn't done what they needed to do to keep it. So I don't know where it actually finally fell out, but that was the estimate that I heard, that 120,000 Pennsylvania families were going to lose their Medicaid. So what happened? So we raised $49,000. So on March 7th, I was sitting at my computer working, and I got an email from Sophia DeVaya, who was our representative for RIP, a lovely person, the most wonderful interaction I've ever had with anybody like this. She did everything I asked. She quickly You know, I'd send her a change to our webpage, and it would be done in a half a day. She was absolutely wonderful. So she sent me this email. She says, "Hi, Jean, I hope you're doing well. I am thrilled to share the final results of our recent debt abolishment with you. In total, the Senate of the Trinity PCUSA's campaign eliminated 5,957,132.58 of medical debt for 6,537 families. Across your service area, please find the county breakdown attached." So we have, if you're interested, a copy of the family breakdown, and I'm going to show it in the next slide. This is hard to read. This is the very first page and the very last page of our debt. So when they abolish debt, they send you a report that looks like this. By county of the debt that was abolished. And the thing that really got me was when we'd started this campaign, she had told me that there was no debt available to buy in West Virginia. Now that's different than there's no debt in West Virginia. We can be pretty sure that there's a lot of debt in West Virginia, but there was no debt on the market. And there is a lot of counties in West Virginia on this debt relief program, on this debt relief thing. We have 5 copies of this. If you'd like one, talk to Bob, to Barb. And if we don't have enough, they can send you a copy. So one of the things I'd like to highlight, a couple of things that surprised me about this that you can't really see. The most debt that we abolished was in Belmont County, Ohio, which was $1,004,000 in Belmont, Ohio. That's where St. Clairsville is. And the one that was really surprising, and that was 1,383 families for an average debt of $726. The one that really surprised me was Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is in the eastern, and it's supposedly a more upper middle class area. 2,165 families for $2.5 million for an average of $1,100 a family. So the most debt that we abolished, a single amount that we abolished, there was two people in Clinton County for an average of $8,500. And the least was in Wetzel County, West Virginia for $44. $44 they were getting dunned and pestered for $44. So I cried when I got this report. The first thing I did was I emailed Mike at the Senate of the Trinity, because he'd been pestering me to tell him how the campaign went. So I promised him that I'd tell him as soon as I found out. So that's the first thing I did. And I sent it to him, and he was wonderful. He had an article about our results on the Senate of the Trinity website in about an hour and a half after I sent him the information. The Senate of the Trinity really supported us a lot. Presbytery, not so much. But they had their Senate assembly in October, and they used our campaign as their mission offering at the Senate assembly. So I know that everybody in the Senate, all the Senate executives and all the Presbytery executives knew about it, but we were just not able to get our word out. So then what happens? After we got our debt report, and after we got the email from Sophia, about 2 weeks after that email, all the families, all 6,000 572 families. Did I get that right? I used to know this for sure. 6,537 families got a letter. And on that letter, it said, your debt of blah, blah, blah has been abolished by your neighbors in the Senate of the Trinity Presbyterian Church, USA. There is no application, tax consequences, or penalties. Just like that, that debt was gone. Imagine getting a letter like that. It kind of chokes me up. So because of the way that this works, because they go out and they buy a portfolio of debt, you can't request that the debt for my nephew, Joe, be abolished. They do it by county or region. And we asked them to do this region, which included these counties. I had to send Sophia a list of all the counties that we wanted included in this campaign. So that's the way it works. They go out by county. So Ted, could you please play the video? I want to show you this video from the website, which has a couple people on it whose debt was abolished. And this is their testimony.
Medical system is failing people when people can't afford to access care. I only seek medical care when absolutely necessary. I had a random instance where I had to go to the ER. I avoided going to the doctor initially, but I needed to get medical help, even though I knew I might not be able to pay for the care that I needed.
Having a daughter with a chronic mental health condition is a lot to manage. Lots of treatment, outpatient, inpatient. When things are really bad, you pursue treatment. But the deductibles were just piling up and piling up and piling up.
I had emergency heart surgery and then subsequent medical care afterwards, but then I lost my insurance. I was managing my care without insurance, just seeing my primary care doctor. I was concerned about those costs adding up, so I wasn't seeing the cardiac specialist.
When I finally received the hospital bill, I was shocked. I didn't expect it to be that expensive.
Just a routine visit cost me $600 sometimes, and I think that is outrageous, and is I just can't afford it. It's a horrible position to have to be put in as a parent, to have to weigh a kind of cost-benefit analysis about your children's health and well-being.
It's frustrating because I want to pay my bills, but at the end of the day, if I have to make a decision between keeping my lights on and having food in the fridge, I'm going to prioritize that over paying the hospital.
There's lots of guilt that people feel if they want to pay their medical bills and aren't in a position to pay it. It weighs on you heavily. The constant calls from medical debt collectors are so anxiety provoking.
One of the things that's important for my health is not to be stressed. Get to a point to where you just feel like you're underneath all of these pressures. So when I got the letter from Undue Medical Debt, it was just unbelievable. When you have this kind of debt relief, it does something for you psychologically, emotionally, and physically.
Having Undue Medical Debt step in and relieve some of that stress is incredible.
It's this huge weight off my shoulders. It gave me an opportunity to have a fresh start, if you will.
I think it's critical to have companies like Undue Medical Debt because they truly are saving lives.
There's a need to be much more thoughtful, really providing a system that is able to care for all.
Healthcare should be available to people regardless of their ability to pay. It's a necessity. Unfortunately, that's not how the system is set up, not right now. In the meantime, I'm really grateful we have organizations like Undue Medical Debt to fill the gap and provide support that people need.
So, how can you guys get involved with this? The first thing we can all do is to comment on the proposal that President Biden has made to keep medical debt off of credit reports. The other thing you can do is to donate to undo medical debt with either your own campaign or just as a donation or by supporting another campaign. Ted, could you go to that website, the Undo Medical Debt website? I forgot about that one. Sorry, it's not really a video. Let's see what comes up. So if you go to How You Can Help on their website is Undo, U-N-D-U-E. It's a little pun. I really like that. I love puns. Little play on words. undomedicaldebt.org, all one word. So you can either support a campaign, you can, and there are currently no campaigns in Pennsylvania. I know there's national campaigns, so you could support a national campaign, or you could go on there and find another campaign that you could support. You could start a campaign. Could start your own campaign. It could be the Westminster campaign to alleviate medical debt for whoever you want by county. Now, keep in mind that the city of Pittsburgh used $1 million of their COVID relief money to work with undue medical debt for people living in the city of Pittsburgh. And I talked to Sophia about that. I said, is that going to reduce the amount of people in our campaign who need to have their medical debt relieved? And she said, no, because they were going to work with the hospitals. So they were going to work with hospitals to relieve medical debt before it got to the debt collectors. So they've sort of expanded what they do, which I think is why they've changed their name, because they're starting to work more with hospitals, and they're starting to work more on policies. And their goal, their ultimate goal, is to work themselves out of business so that they don't, that we don't have this problem anymore, and that they don't have to do that. One of the things that you should know, though, if you start your own campaign, is that they want you to make a commitment of at least $10,000. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind, though, is if you just donate a chunk of money to them, they take 20% for overhead. If you start a campaign, all of it down to 38 cents goes towards buying medical debt. So those are the things that you kind of have to weigh. I'm really glad we did this. I wish we'd had better buy-in. It was interesting. The churches that supported our campaign were mostly, they were all except one, churches pastored by women. And they were mostly churches, inner city or Black churches. First of Cain, Bethesda, Second in Wilkinsburg, Crafton, which is not a woman related, a woman pastor church, but they were all lower income. And I said something to somebody about it, and she said, well, those are the congregations where they know what medical debt is, and they understand what that means. So I was really touched by the donations that we got from those congregations. So do you have any questions? The man with the mic is coming.
How does long-term nursing care debt relate into this? Is that part of medical debt, or is that a separate issue?
I think that's a totally separate issue, because I think we'd be seeing a lot higher numbers of debt owed if that were the case. I don't even want to think about that.
What was the actual amount that was paid on the debt? You said it was purchased for one penny for $100 worth of debt. What did Undue Medical finally pay? What was their payout? That's my question. What was their payout to alleviate the debt?
So the debt that we donated $48,986.35. And I believe that's what they paid. I don't know whether they paid less than that, but I believe that's what they paid for that debt. $5,957,132.58.
So in other words, it was less than a penny on the dollar.
It was less than a penny on the dollar, which actually surprised me. I thought it was going to be more because this has become such a big thing. I mean, you'll go, if you Googled medical debt, you'll see all sorts of campaigns. There was a woman who was dying. She was like in her early 30s and she was dying. And she asked people to donate to RIP medical debt. And she raised like over $2 million in like a month. I was like, so not fair. But so when we first started this, Sophia said that there was $20 million of debt in Pennsylvania and Ohio, because remember, there wasn't any debt available in West Virginia. $20 million of debt, and it would cost us $350,000. So that was, you know, more than a penny. It was like 1.7 pennies on the dollar. So when I got this result, I was like, wow, that really surprised me. So I was really happy.
I have three thoughts. We had a prayer in church today, and someone said in the prayer, a privilege is not a blessing unless it's shared. That's one thought. Another thing is that we are so wealthy in this country. We have the resources. We could make this all go away. I'm just not smart enough to know how to fix our system. So I got just a question. Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, there are so many poor people that go there with their kids, and the care gets written off as free care. I'm not sure how it's paid for, but that seems to be a small solution. How much of that kind of effort made by private hospitals works into this?
You know, I'm no expert on this. So I don't know. I know that they have that marathon, or is it every, don't they have a children's hospital marathon to get money to for some of that free care? And the hospitals, I'm sure, do pay off some of that. But you know what that does is it raises the bills for the rest of us.
Or I guess they have an.
You know, when I broke my elbow on the youth work trip and I went to UPMC with my UPMC insurance, it's sort of like they're taking it out of one bucket and putting it into another with my UPMC insurance. Medical care and insurance is so complicated in this country. I can't answer your question, but it's just so complicated. And I think that's part of it. Yes, Ted.
So I will offer an observation about how complicated it is and why it's difficult. And y'all can throw rotten tomatoes at me. Humans are susceptible to greed.
Mm-hmm.
All of us. And so hospitals are struggling to serve an important mission of providing care to children and adults and people who are suffering, but they also have to function financially. And so they grab money wherever they can, including occasionally hospitals that we respect that wind up taking the homes of people who can't pay their medical debt and putting them on the street indirectly or directly. And it's just part of the system. Insurance companies are trying to provide access to care through financing mechanisms that make it possible for people to get care. But they also have to make a profit. And they do things that would at times appear that they have fallen victim to greed, such as Cigna has an artificial intelligence program that allows reviewers of medical claims to deny a claim in claims in large batches, less than 1 second per claim. And the rationale there is if we say no initially, maybe some of those people come back at us and say, oh, but no, this is legitimate. But if 1 out of 10 or 2 out of 10 or 5 out of 10 don't come back, well, that's money they get to keep. And they need to keep the money to stay afloat, but people get squished in the interim. And then there's the greed of people seeking medical care who say, I want all the care I can get, even if it costs $1 million for me to live an extra week with my cancer. Mm-hmm. And that's a certain sort of greed that comes out of not being able to confront mortality, right? And that's where the church has a role to play in saying, and we don't get many people coming to our seminars when we talk about end of life, because people's heads hurt to think about it. But confronting our mortality is something important that faith does. So that's my rant.
Go ahead, rant.
You mentioned the 4 times the poverty rate. Hospitals are regulated by a couple of dozen different state and federal agencies. Agencies that regulates not-for-profit hospitals, which would include Children's Hospital and all of the UPMC hospitals, is that they must have a program for people who are below 4 times the poverty rate in some states, 5 times the poverty rate in some, or poverty rate in some states. So hospitals themselves are required to provide care to people who can't pay for it, and they are not allowed to use their charge master rates in order to bill those people. So that might be one of the reasons you're able to buy debt for the pennies on the dollar. But it seems to me that the program you're talking about is a welcome competitor to collection agencies. It's basically working to put them out of business, essentially, which is certainly an admirable goal, I would think.
Well, the debt collectors have other businesses too. It's not just medical debt. But yes, the guys who started this were debt collectors. And they had a segment on CBS Sunday Morning about a year and a half ago that actually talked to one of the guys who started it. And if you're interested, you could probably Google it and watch that segment. It was really, really good. It was really good. And I'd like to suggest you watch it. It's about 10 minutes. So people are telling me it's time to stop. So thank you all for coming. And if you want to see this, Barb has them.